futuro.
We have been invisibilized for so long. Shouldn't we be the ones to be telling these stories and to not be questioned?
Uno, dos, tres.
Hey, welcome to In the Thick. This is a podcast about politics, race, and culture from a POC perspective. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Joining us from Durango, Colorado. Actually, let's just say it like that.
Durango, Colorado.
Or Durango, Colorado. Is ITT All-Star Jenny Monet, an independent investigative journalist, tribal citizen of the Laguna Pueblo people. Hey, Jenny, welcome back to the show. It's good to talk to you.
Hi, friends. Yes, it's really good to be back here, and I'm glad to hear you guys are doing okay.
Yeah, and speaking of doing okay, we are sending love out to Kelsey Kilona.
Yes.
She's a reporter at Indigenews covering the Okanagan region in British Columbia, Canada. And believe it or not, Kelsey isn't able to join us today because she's being evacuated because of wildfires in Canada. So we're sending you lots of love, Kelsey, and hoping you get safe and sound. We're going to be talking actually about the climate and Indigenous people. So lots of love.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to talk about Indigenous history. I actually got to say, I'm joining you. I'm on the land of the Taino people because I'm talking to you from the Dominican Republic in the area of Punta Cana, which was definitively indigenous of the Taino people.
Yeah.
So that's an honor, you know, an honor and recognition. But today we're going to be talking about what a lot of you have been seeing on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Some of you have been reading, reporting about it. This is the horrors of residential schools in both Canada and the U.S. and the disappearance of children. There are multiple stories that we've been seeing about these mass graves of Indigenous children all across Canada. We're going to start there. But before we get into this, Jenny, you know, we got to do a temperature check. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
How are you doing? What's your temperature check?
Well, I think it's important that we're documenting the moments that we're in because there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
I currently am actually feeling really blessed. I spent all day yesterday on my Indigenous homelands on the Chaco Canyon, walking the very ground of my ancestors. And I just have to tell you that I am about to start this incredible journey up north through Canada and to Alaska. And as I was leaving my homelands out of what we call today New Mexico, I was greeted with two full double rainbows.
Oh, and nice.
I'm just saying that.
No,
I feel
my God.
Like,
can we have a double rainbow moment, though? Like, double rainbow.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Double rainbows are just beautiful.
I mean, I just feel like there's these small signs that have been greeting me along the way, animals, plant medicines. And then right before I went to go spend time at Chaco, I had stopped at the totem pole that is making its way across the country right now in honor of saving our sacred sites, our holiest lands. And it's on its way to DC as of last week. And two of the stops I've been writing about extensively, Bears Ears and Chaco Canyon, which are considered our ancient homelands of the Pueblo people. And I'm just here to say that I've woke up feeling in pretty good shape for whatever comes at me.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Mamita. Thank you for sharing that with us because it's those roots that feed us and they're still alive. You know, those roots are everywhere around us. So we really appreciate that context. And thank you for all of your reporting and for taking us on this journey with you. We really appreciate it, Jenny. So look, this story about the residential school systems in Canada has just been horrifying. I think because we know that, you know, again, it's not new. So what's become clear is that more than 150,000 Indigenous students attended these schools between the mid-1800s until the 1990s. And that was when the schools closed. So the 1990s, okay, so that's like what?
Mm-hmm.
30 years ago, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The children were forcibly separated from their families with the goal of essentially erasing their Indigenous heritage forcing them to assimilate, mm-hmm. indoctrinating them into white Canadian society, telling them that this was the best thing for them.
Yeah.
We know from survivors the trauma that basically you have to live through in these schools. There's so much abuse because of the, you know, basically looking at Indigenous people like they are less than human. So we are learning more and more just how horrific these abuses were. In May, the remains of 215 Indigenous children were found at the site of a former residential school that was established and run by, the Roman Catholic Church.
Ding, 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 ding. The Roman Catholic Church for 500. What a surprise.
So since this revelation, hundreds more unmarked graves have been discovered in different schools across the country, bringing the total number of remains found in unmarked graves to over 1,000.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Children.
Yes.
Children. Hmm. Some Indigenous researchers have said that they believe there are many, many more. Let's be clear. This is multi-generational genocide exacted on the most vulnerable children.
Yeah. And the schools were run both by the federal government and as well as the Catholic Church. And Indigenous communities are calling for the church to release all the documents and records relating to these schools in order to help the search and identify more students, bringing some form of closure to their families. But at the same time with all that, once this news broke, the Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau, said in a news conference that he was committed to telling the truth.
I recognize these findings only deepen the pain that families, survivors, and all Indigenous peoples and communities are already feeling, that they reaffirm a truth that they have long known. To members of the Penelicut tribe, we are here for you. We cannot bring back those who were lost, but we can and we will continue to tell the truth. Just like we will continue to work in partnership with Indigenous peoples to fight discrimination and systemic racism with real, concrete actions.
And the Canadian government did indeed fund the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada in 2008 with the goal of documenting and acknowledging all this history. But we also know the government under the leadership of Trudeau has spent millions of dollars fighting Indigenous communities in court. In the midst of all these latest discoveries, the Catholic Church has yet to make a public apology. So there you go. No public apology to take responsibility for their role in residential schools. Pope Francis is expected to meet with Indigenous leaders later this year to talk about the church's role in operating these schools. But we're still seeing this truth being whitewashed today, even from Indigenous leaders, which is really not surprising in a little way because colonialism and imperialism, it's complicated, right? So Dr. Alain Lachmodier, who was just appointed the new Indigenous Reconciliation and Northern Relations Minister, was confronted by Wab Kanew, who's the leader of the Manitoba New Democratic Party and an honorary witness for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission earlier this week when he gave a press conference about the residential school system. Let's take a listen to this.
The residential school system was designed to take Indigenous children and give them the skills and abilities they would need to fit into society as it moved forward. So,
I am an honorary witness for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. I listen to the stories of the survivors.
Yes.
And I cannot accept you saying what you just said about residential schools. It was the express intent of residential schools to kill the Indian in the child. It is not cultural relativism. It is not revisionist history for us to say that that was wrong. Any right-minded person at the time should have known that it was wrong. Many did know and speak up against it. And if you are to take your job seriously, starting today, you have to change that thing.
I look forward to working with you in the future as a leader of the opposition.
We'll give you a chance, but you can't be out here defending residential schools if you want to work with Indigenous communities.
So, Jenny, I mean, we're talking about hundreds of children's remains. Mm-hmm. This government response, give me your take. I mean, has it been enough? Is there even a true path forward to reconciliation on this? I mean, what are your thoughts about all this? It's so complex.
It is complex, but then it isn't. It's buried truth, right? I mean, it's been buried for so long, and that's why coming to terms with this is a long process. And if you compare that to the United States and where we are only just now pulling back the curtain, you take a look at Canada and the timeline of the fact that they have hosted a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. They have addressed 94 recommendations that the Canadian government should take and are tracking those recommendations of being put into action. And those two things right there.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at the number of Truth and Reconciliation Commissions that actually have taken place worldwide, we're talking double digit numbers here. So I think that when we start to understand what those concepts mean, truth and reconciliation, actual apologies, that these are steps to heal and to advance our societies in ways of which we are addressing the systemic structures that have led to what we do know now, that genocide was the right word all along and that we need to atone for that.
Yeah.
You know, in this whole revelation of the bodies that were discovered at first, that's what really started this, the 215 at Kamloops. That was not new information for Indigenous people, certainly not here in the United States and,
right.
of course, in Canada. And what that did was spark the kind of hidden truth that we know here in the United States as well. You know, there are people will say that those 94 recommendations that came out of Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission haven't been taken seriously, that they haven't really been embraced. The CBC, the Canadian Broadcast Corporation, has an excellent interactive list that is tracking exactly what the government has done and the status of each of those recommendations. And I think that that's the best thing that we could all do in effort as journalists, as people of our communities, as lawmakers, to keep talking about this and to not just put it quietly in a drawer and try to move on.
Seriously.
I'm sure, Jenny, that you've heard this, but it was like a year ago when I heard an Indigenous leader say that the first sin was slavery, but the original sin was genocide.
Oh, yeah.
And that we have to remember this, right? Know that genocide, basically, it's such an essential part of the Americas. Let's just leave it at that. The Americas.
Just
like the Americas.
The West.
Mm-hmm. Right. The United States also, specifically in terms of the boarding schools, they existed in the United States for over 150 years for the same reasons of indoctrinating them into white Christian society. And again, telling them, like the Indigenous leader said, this is for your good.
Yeah.
So you can learn how to operate with the nice white man.
That's right.
So just this Saturday, the Rosebud Sioux tribe in South Dakota was able to bury the remains of 9 Indigenous children who had been taken from their families and communities over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And forced to attend the former Carlisle Indian Reform School in Pennsylvania. Mm. Many of you saw this on Instagram. It was very powerful to have people stand in the dugout graves where these children should have been buried.
Yeah.
We know that families who refused to send their children to these boarding schools faced particular consequences. The government would order the Bureau of Indian Affairs to hold back on their food rations, for example, or supplies. In late June, Deb Haaland, the Secretary of the Interior, the first Indigenous cabinet member ever in the United States, announced that the U.S. government would investigate the former Indigenous boarding schools for the remains of children in this country who were forcibly separated from their families. So now, whereas Canada has been speaking out about this history for years, again, silence for 500, that would be the United States government. They've basically not been talking about it for all of these centuries.
Yeah.
But after a year of racial reckoning in the country, you know, there has to be a dialogue. There has to be honesty about the settler, colonial, racist origin of the United States. And those are very rough words. They sound horrible, but yo.
Facts.
We have to recognize that. Exacto. Thank you, Julio.
It's facts. I mean, it's facts.
It's just facts, okay? So we're seeing a battle now emerge around critical race theory, Republican legislators wanting to ban these discussions in schools because, oh my God, what if people learn about racial justice and the history of this country? Mm-hmm. Okay, yes, education is a first step. Jenny, when it comes to these communities and what they are owed, you know, and all of these feelings that we have. What about dialogue and not just reconciliation, but let's just say, por Dios, actual reparations, actual support to allow our first peoples, our true founding fathers and founding mothers, to have these communities thrive?
Well, what we're talking about is restorative justice, right? The kind of justice that doesn't happen in what we as Indigenous peoples call the courts of the conquerors. Those courts have never been spaces that have made right the wrongs that have been inflicted on certainly Indigenous peoples, certainly Black Americans, and now immigrants. And, you know, this is all coming home to reconcile with these truths. And I think that it's a very painful conversation right now for a lot of white folks who have clearly understood how the structures and the imbalance has worked in their favor. And there's not a day that goes by that I don't think what's coming, because at every step, we as Indigenous peoples know what happens when we speak up and speak out and actually reveal truth. And I think that it ends, you know, with a lot of conflict. Look at Standing Rock. I think that's why Deb Haaland is so powerful and impactful, because she is challenging a system whose very design was based on genocide and white supremacy and killing of cultures and people to get at lands and to colonize.
Yeah.
And the colonization, let's just be very clear, colonization continues to happen every day. And when we start to understand it in that context, for instance, right now, my latest newsletter on Indigenously was about the space race, but it's not the space race that, you know, my parents grew up with. It's between billionaires wanting to put their own space planes and create tourism for the masses. And you didn't read about it in that context in any of the headlines. It was all about two white guys trying to compete to go into space. And we need to really change the narrative here. Like, let's call it what it is.
And they got so much friggin' attention. It was like the access, the narrative. It's like, this is white supremacy in action. I mean, there's no other way to put it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we're not writing about it that way. And we're in a moment right now where this time is so open for that kind of conversation and that kind of acceptance. And as a journalist who's been in these white spaces, we're trying to work that narrative in for the last 20 plus years. I mean, that's really what my newsletter is about. It's kind of like telling you stuff that we should be seeing in our news feeds all the time, but we're not.
We also know that issues that drive much of Indigenous activism and organizing are the very same issues affecting the entire world. Like, for example, from the climate crisis to the coronavirus pandemic. I mean, we've talked about it on In the Thick before, about how Indigenous activists are really at the forefront of these issues. And Jenny, you're actually on the road right now reporting on Indigenous issues, including the climate crisis and its impact on these communities. Recently, we've seen record-breaking heat waves across the United States and Canada as well. And even one of our guests today, Kelsey, literally couldn't make it because she and her family needed to evacuate the wildfires, which are growing worse. So, you know, that it's all there. It's right in front of us. And when it comes to environmentalism and who knows this land, we know it's those who've been here. Let's be real. So we've been talking about reconciliation with this horrific history and the intergenerational trauma it's caused Indigenous communities. Yet when it comes to environmental issues and climate change, we still have policies both in the U.S. and Canada, like destructive pipelines that are harming these very same communities. So Jenny, talking more about these issues, how do we begin to dismantle the systemic racism and oppression when it comes to these issues?
Well, I think one thing that's really exciting for me as an Indigenous person and an Indigenous journalist is that we're in an unprecedented time right now where people are starting to pay attention to the Indigenous narrative and experience in ways that we've just not seen. And I mean that across the board in all representations in the media, in journalism, in government. And right now, as I said about that totem pole, while it might seem just kind of lighthearted and more on a cultural level.
Yeah.
It has real meaning. It's stopping at all of these holy lands that are under attack. These aren't just holy lands that we're celebrating because they're medicine spaces of our people. We're stopping there because they are being encroached on by uranium mining companies, by oil and gas companies, by coal companies. I mean, Deb Haaland's nomination and confirmation hearing was an incredible proxy fight for fossil fuels or for the whole energy development of this country, which has, you know, largely we look at countries like America and Canada as being natural resource extraction, you know, outfits, you know, that have catered to these companies and these corporations that have caused so much harm.
Because it's all on indigenous land. And then, you know,
all of it is on indigenous lands.
I want to see when the checks are being written that are owed in the billions of dollars of royalties to the people of these lands.
Well, you speak about the royalties. I mean, I'm Laguna Pueblo, and we, during the 50s and 60s, were home to the largest uranium open pit mine in the world, the Jackpile mine. So we know what it's like when you look at the imbalances of a natural resource extraction giant coming in, raping the land and leaving and not even cleaning up afterwards. I lost my grandfather who died very young. There's a reason why you don't see a lot of our old Pueblo men, because they all worked at those mines and were exposed to radiation. And so the costs are invisible. The costs are silent. You know, it's beyond just the money. And it has long-term lasting consequences when you start to look at losses of language and culture and the identity factors that play in.
Yeah.
And that's why this moment is so powerful. That's why that totem pole moving across the country right now speaks larger to anything else. And there was a woman there at the Chaco Canyon event, and she had a sign. And on one side, it was about, you know, fighting climate change. And on the other side, it was an elder woman. It said, "I am a boarding school survivor."
Exactly.
It's all connected.
It's right here.
That's it.
So, Jenny, you brought up the issue of silence, right? And so let's talk about the role of the media in all of this.
Let's talk about silence with the media.
I like that, Maria.
Okay, here's your in the thick reminder of who overwhelmingly like owns and operates and has the final say on most of the media. It's wealthy white men. They happen to have a kind of perspective when it comes to these things. We're just saying, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with the silence and invisibility. So specifically, we want to talk about something difficult, okay? And it's trauma. So as we know in the mainstream media that we have all worked in, that the mainstream media can really be complicit in perpetrating that trauma and reporting about these communities only when there's trauma involved. As mainstream journalism was built essentially on basically white supremacy, we take this into consideration a lot here at In the Thick, and how journalists of color are not given autonomy over their own voices and stories. So when POC journalists report on issues in their own communities, you know, we've been through this. You're just too immigrant-y. You're just too...
You're too indigenously, Jenny.
You're just too indigenously, you know.
<That's right. laughs>
So Angela Sterrett, who is an indigenous reporter for the CBC in Vancouver, talked about this last week on the CBC. Let's listen to Angela.
It reminded me of when we had a reckoning in media, and I felt like people said, oh my goodness, we've been failing indigenous people in our stories for so long, and including you, by calling you an advocate or, you know, not a serious journalist just because you cover indigenous stories as an indigenous reporter. And when I've been experiencing this feeling of like real curiosity and interest and respect, and I just want to learn, but not like I want to extract from you, but I just want to learn and do better, it's felt like a huge relief off my shoulders. Like, when I walk into a store, I don't have to, you know, hold that armor up so strong. I can just feel like, oh my God, these people are okay with me being in their space. And I guess it's emotional because Indigenous people are from this land. We shouldn't have to feel like aliens in our own world, or that we are a threat, or that we are not welcome here. Like, it's so twisted and so hurtful and harmful. And so this change, which I'm hoping will last, feels like a burden, a huge burden taken off my shoulders with like, okay, you just take that armor off for just a moment and do my job and live my life.
Mm-hmm. Wow, wow, wow.
I mean, that's kind of the essential thing, which is, so how is it that you, white man, came to own objectivity and look at us and tell us what's objective and what's not?
Exactly.
So, Jenny, can you talk a little bit about these painful issues and how non-Indigenous journalists really need to be more accountable in their reporting so that they're not, again, as Angela said, so that they're not just extracting information from Indigenous communities for their own, frankly, interest?
Well, this issue in all of its parts is what keeps me awake at night, is what cycles through my mind when I go on my long runs, when I'm taking this long journey. And it's traumatic in itself for me, because in this moment of post-George Floyd America that we're now living in, yeah, where the reckoning that we're all experiencing on a daily basis, it's become very clear to me in my 21 years as a journalist of how much crap I've had to put up with in every newsroom that I've been in and out of, and not just little stuff. And the one takeaway that I can say proudly is that I've just always stood up for myself in respectful ways, picked the right battle to fight. Mm. And that's what it's about, unfortunately and sadly. And right now, I think that there's been a lot of soul searching on my own, yeah, in terms of looking at how I've managed so much abuse as a journalist throughout my career. And I don't know quite what my next step is and what I want to do with that, because we're talking about trauma, and trauma comes in a lot of layers for Indigenous peoples anyway. I mean, our lives are traumatic. We inherit trauma. We inherit the trauma of our ancestors, our mothers, our grandparents, our great grandparents. So as a journalist, you know, I've reported on a lot of really heavy stuff. Missing and murdered Indigenous woman was a big one that I had to mentally prepare myself for, mm-hmm, and understand what I was preparing myself in terms of what I knew I might confront, predicting what I might confront. But I never would have predicted that I myself would be victimized. And I don't use that word because I feel like a victim. I use it because I myself was victimized by the very profession of which I am a member of,
yeah,
when I was arrested in April of 2019. They exploited my arrest,
right.
And they did it in a manner that was 1 year ahead of George Floyd and everyone looking and trusting the police for whatever they said. And it turns out that we all know that these structures are now white supremacist structures. They are racist. So that when I was calling those things out the night that I was arrested and it was exploited on the media to somehow take down a brown woman publicly.
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you, I have not yet written about that yet, because I'm still managing the trauma of that exposure. And that's what this white structure of media has been doing all along.
It fucks with your mind too. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
It frames black and brown people in ways that they are the villains, and this is how we treat these stories.
Exactly.
Speaking of taking things personally, I want to ask you, I'm kind of like going a full 180 here, because I did have my roots found
with Skip Gates
by a dude by the name of Henry Louis Gates. And so something else that happened, Jenny, is that Skip did end. This is the moment when I really did have a moment when he said, look, I just want you to know that your matrilineal line is fully Indigenous.
Mm.
And so I am like basically a quarter Indigenous. And I'm really challenging myself to, one, understand that the reason why this isn't talked about is because Indigenous women are never spoken about in history. Our records are never recorded. Our stories are not told.
Right.
Unless from the perspective of men.
True.
But very specifically, for those of us who are kind of wanting to come more into contact with our own Indigenous roots respectfully, how should we do that? And how should we use this as a way of helping us in terms of our own reporting and being better journalists, better colleagues, and better allies?
Well, first of all, I did not know that about your roots with Skip. And I think that's so awesome that you have that story now for you to take with you in your work, Maria.
It's a great show, Jenny, too. You have to watch it. It's so good.
I will. I want to check it out.
There's a lot of drama. A lot of drama.
But there's great pictures of Maria's parents that are just beautiful.
Oh, I love that. It is a thorny issue, indigeneity, because on one hand, there are stories like Maria's of, you know, these robbed identities, because that's what it was. I mean, it's a robbed identity that you, you know, through genocide, through land theft, through all of that, right? That you are part of a generation right now, Maria, that everyone is reclaiming. There's a lot of reclaiming going on, and that's what's exciting about it. On the flip side of that, and if you're on the inside of Indian country, you have a lot of pretendianism. That's a coined phrase that's been used for a lot of people who are kind of the Rachel Dolezals of Indian country, right? And
oh my God,
it's messed up.
It's a thing. It's a thing.
It's a total thing. Cultural appropriation, identity appropriation. It's a total thing. So I put it in those kind of bookends for you.
Yeah.
Because you got to tread carefully in terms of exploring your indigenous roots, honoring them, respecting them, because on the other side of that, indigenous peoples are getting a lot of, to be quite honest, colonizers coming in now to take the identity. They took the land, you know, they took the songs, the ceremonies, now they want our identities. And it's just so messed up, and it's sensitive. And as indigenous peoples who know our roots, who don't need any kind of, you know, assurances, it's frustrating. It's incredibly frustrating because simply because we have been invisibilized for so long that shouldn't we be the ones to just be telling these stories and to not be questioned? There's a magazine piece that I'm writing right now, and I'm just here to tell you, I'm not going to name the publication, but I will not be writing for them again. And it's been incredibly insulting the entire time that my, once again, my indigenous knowledge is being questioned, and that my framing of things, you know, even if it's not jotted down in written history, right, that it's just not being taken seriously, even in this moment where you have so many people clamoring now to cover the indigenous narrative. And that is another form of colonization right now, is that I know probably five or six indigenous journalists, including myself, who are basically working for ourselves independently, while there are how many staff positions being created in newsrooms big and small across this country filled by non-Native journalists, or journalists who say, oh, well, my grandmother was X, Y, or Z.
I think the question of what Jenny is saying is, like, for me, I'm like, wow, there's a robbed history that I need to be aware of, right? Invisibility. But then there's another conversation, which is don't become part of robbing other communities, right? Become a respectful part of the community and become a good ally. So the takeaway is, do the work. If this has been told to me, now I need to do the work, all of the work. And part of the spiritual work, because you guys know I'm very spiritual, is in fact doing that spiritual connection. So Jenny's going to understand when I tell her that arriving here to this land of the Taino people, the land of my husband, right, that there would be two Caribbean hawks living in our home and overseeing me and welcoming me and speaking to me every morning as I'm writing, and all of the birds who are here. So, you know, it is part of doing that spiritual work.
All right, so let's move on to our final segment, which we call La Última y Nos Vamos, or The Last One Before You Go.
All right, Jenny, so as we talk about reconciliation and healing, we do want to end on a note of empowerment and joy, because our joy is resistance. And I'm wondering, Jenny, can you share something that you do with your own community for yourself? You've been talking about this, about, you know, finding a way to inspire you. And I'm just wondering, you've talked about this following the totem, being on your land, connecting with the land. Is there something else that you want to share with us that is helping you in this time and centering you as a rooted, beautiful, fabulous journalist of the Laguna Pueblo people?
You know, in working through a lot of my own obstacles in the last couple of years, I work out a lot. I'm a runner, long distance runner, and I had a a little health issue where I couldn't run as much. Well, long story short, I'm now healing from all of that and getting back to that. And I came full circle with during the pandemic of writing my newsletter. And, you know, a lot of people might think that that newsletter is just a product of my journalism and something I do for my profession. But I'm here to tell you that it has been also very therapeutic for my soul, because it's the tagline of Indigenously is called decolonizing your newsfeed. And what I've come to understand in my own practice of that is that decolonizing is a practice. It's a daily practice. It is, even I as an Indigenous person am understanding all of the deep roots of what I need to do to decolonize. So that newsletter has become a bed for me, that I rest all of my thoughts, I rest all my future, I rest the world I want to be in. And I'm just so grateful for it, because it takes care of me, and I offer it to whoever wants to receive it. And so that's what I've been doing. And I love that this project just kind of came to me organically.
Wow.
Well, you know what that means. It was meant to be. Mm-hmm. And I now know that I have a sister who is a runner like me. And so I think we'll have to go running together.
Oh, I would love that.
And we'll go bird watching together. Okay.
Two things I love, birds and running. You know, we could definitely do those things.
Oh, that sounds cool. I can just watch.
Jenny Monet, Indigenous independent investigative journalist from the Laguna Pueblo people. Thank you so much for joining Julio and me on this episode of In the Thick. We love you so much. Thank you for sharing your brilliance and your intelligence and your journalism. We appreciate it.
Love you both so much. Thank you, guys.
I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
And remember, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us. It really helps. Also, you can listen to us on Pandora, Spotify, wherever you choose to get your podcasts on this week. Check us out on the web at inthethick.org. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In The Thick Show. Like us on Facebook and tell your friends and family. You hear that? That's the hawk, okay? If you hear it in the background, that's the hawk. In The Thick is produced by Noor Saudi, Harshana Hatta, our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow, Lisa Salinas, and our intern, Sarah Hershander, with editorial support from Charlotte Mangin and Nicole Rothwell. Our audio engineering team is Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, Leah Shaw Dameron, and Gabriela Baez. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Thanks to Raul Perez for recording me. The music that you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kep and ZZK Records. I love it. The hawk is right there. We'll see you on our next episode, dear listener. Thank you for listening. I send you love all the way from Punta Cana, Dominican Republic, home of the Caribbean Hawks, who are making their voices heard. See you next time. Bye.
See you, everybody.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.